Welcome back to another episode of the CSK8 podcast. My name is Jared O'Leary. Each week of this podcast is either an interview with a guest or multiple guests or a solo episode where I unpack some scholarship in relation to computer science education. Although I haven't done an interview in a while, it's simply because I've got contractors coming over during the day, so I'm having to record these episodes really early in the morning or late at night. But in today's episode, we are going to unpack a paper titled Rethinking the Roles of Assessment in Music Education. And before you tune away real quick, don't worry, I am going to relate this to computer science education. This paper is written by Sheila J. Scott. Here's the abstract for this paper. Quote, in music education, current attention to student-centered approaches for learning affects our understanding of student assessment. This view to curriculum reform requires new perspectives for assessment. There is a need to move beyond the summative use of assessment to assign grades to examining the roles of assessment in supporting and enhancing learning. To this end, multiple roles of assessment are examined under three headings. 1. Assessment of learning. 2. Assessment for learning. And 3, assessment as learning, end quote. Now, if I were to summarize this paper into a single sentence, I'd say that it summarizes three roles of assessment, which are the assessment of learning, assessment for learning, and assessment as learning. As always, you can find a link to this paper and other helpful resources and podcasts in the show notes at jaredoleary.com, or by simply clicking the link in the app that you're listening to this on. Just go to the description of this episode. While you're there, you'll notice that this podcast is powered by Boot Up Professional Development, which is the nonprofit that I work for and where I create 100% free elementary coding curriculum, and we provide paid professional development. So check out bootuppd.org if you haven't been there yet. All right, so here's a few sentences from page 31 in the introduction that kind of summarizes, well, what are those three different assessment types? I'm going to change out the word like musical and music for computer science, just so it's not so jarring. So a slight rephrasing of a couple words. Quote, computer science educators are responsible for providing valid and reliable information of their students' performance in relation to a wide variety of learning outcomes. When this information serves a summative role, such as the assessment of grades, it is denoted as assessment of learning. Teachers are also responsible for providing feedback to help students extend their understanding of computer science concepts and to assist all students in enhancing their computer science proficiencies. When assessments assumes this formative role, it is denoted as assessment for learning. Students are encouraged to reflect on assessment information as a way to gain personal insights into how they are performing and to enhance their perceptions of what they need to do in order to comprehend computer science with greater understanding and to improve their technical expertise in coding. When assessment takes on a role of self-reflection, it becomes assessment as learning. End quote. So summative assessments are assessment of learning, formative assessments are assessment for learning, and then these self-reflective assessments, which I've often referred to as ipsative assessments, are assessments as learning. So you learn by going through the process. I've mentioned these in other episodes, but I realized, okay, I need to actually do like a deeper dive and talk about what influenced that understanding of the three different assessment types. So the author under the section that's titled Multiple Roles talks about how students are engaging in constructivist practices when they are learning in communities of practice and doing so collaboratively, and how if we are going to facilitate these kinds of experiences, we need to approach assessment in different ways than we may have been taught when we were students. Because I don't know about for you, at least with my experience, it was not student-centered. It was very group-based and we're all doing the same thing. And that thing was generally very boring and unrelated to anything that I actually wanted to learn or my peers wanted to learn, and really didn't have much real-world context. We were memorizing facts and figures, multiplication tables, and things like that, and then immediately forgetting much of it after the test was over. So the author's saying, if we're going to focus on student-centered approaches to learning, then we need to approach assessment differently. All right, so on page 32, the author has a table that's titled The Roles for Assessment. This is table one. So it talks about the three different types in three different columns to make it easy to kind of compare the three. So it has assessment of learning, for learning, and as learning. Now for Boot Up, I have an assessment resource that's linked to in every one of the lesson plans that I created. And in this assessment resources document, it has a table that is like a rephrasing of this table by Scott. So I'm going to read that off just because it makes more sense in relation to computer science education. I'm also going to go ahead and just refer to it as summative, formative, and ipsative. So I'm not saying assessment of learning, assessment for learning, assessment as learning. Like, I'd rather say one word rather than three, because I think that's easier for a podcast. By the way, this is a biased table. Like, it's clear which one the authors prefer. So just to be completely candid, there's a place for all three of these. So summative assessments are done to the coder. Formative assessments are done for the coder. And ipsative assessments are done by the coder. Summative is traditional. Formative is more constructivist, constructionist. And ipsative is more self-reflective. Summative is centered on a facilitator. or teacher. Formative is centered on the coding, and ipsative is centered on the coder. Summative positions coders as passive learners. Formative positions coders as active learners, and ipsative positions coders as active learners. Summative occurs after instruction. Formative is integrated with instruction, and ipsative is also integrated with instruction, typically at the end. Summative is competitive. Formative is collaborative, and ipsative is personal. Summative helps facilitators assess perceived understanding of coding. Formative helps coders learn through feedback from others, and ipsative helps coders learn through self-reflection. Summative limits communication between facilitators, coders, and peers. Formative increases communication between facilitators, coders, and peers, and ipsative increases communication between facilitator, coders, and peers. Summative may create extrinsic rewards and does not accurately represent a coder's understanding. Formative may interrupt a coder's active experience with coding, like if you go in the middle of a project and you start asking, what are you learning? What are you working on? And disrupt that flow. And ipsative can lack focus without guidance and feedback from a facilitator or peers. For example, if you don't have prompts for your ipsative assessments, then students might be like, I don't know how to do this thing. It's probably foreign to them if they're in the United States. And an example of summative assessment might include a test or synthesis project that is graded by correctness or a specific rubric with criteria. An example of formative assessment might include questions asked by a facilitator during a process or a synthesis project with reflection, and this could possibly include a minimum criteria. And then an example of an ipsative assessment might include a reflection journal or reflective questions regarding understanding of coding concepts and practices in relation to prior projects, which may also be discussed with a peer or a facilitator. So summative is usually done at the end. It's usually right and wrong answers to that. Formative is usually done in the middle of the process or through some kind of a synthesis. And then ipsative is typically a reflection that can be done like at the end of a day or end of a lesson or at the completion of like a full project. So let's say you have a project that takes like 2 weeks to complete. You could do an ipsative assessment at the end of each day, as well as an ipsative assessment at the end of each week or the end of the entire project. All of these have different values and can be very useful for kind of guiding your own learning. Because what you'll do is you'll go through it and be like, okay, how does my understanding compare to my prior understanding, like at the start of this lesson or this project? And then how does that compare to a couple of projects ago? And then thinking through, well, where do I want to go next? So you start by centering around what your current understanding is in comparison to prior understandings, and then you think forward to where you're heading next. So for me, in my classes, even though kids could like choose how long they wanted to work on something, sometimes it'd be for just a day or two. Other times they'd work on it for literally multiple years in a row, the same project, continuing to expand on it and dive deeper into it. And so what I would do at the start of each week is have them reflect on their understanding and set goals for themselves for what they're going to do over the next week. And then when we come back to that the following week, they'll reflect on how their understandings have changed since the prior week or prior projects, etc. When a student finishes one of those projects, I then ask them to immediately start working on another one or thinking through what they're going to do for the next one. There's never like a, all right, you earned a game day. Now you don't do anything. More like, cool, you learned something. Now what do you want to learn? Or cool, you created something. Now what do you want to create? Now to concretize things a little bit more, in that assessment resources document that I created for BootUp, I have some example questions that you can ask. So for summative assessment, an example question might be, can coders debug the debugging exercises found in the lesson? Did coders create a project similar to the project on bootuppd.org? Now for formative, you might be able to ask questions like, what are three different ways you could change that sprite's algorithm? Or what happens if you change the order of these blocks? Or what could you add or change to this code? And what do you think would happen? How might you use code like this in everyday life, etc.? And then for ipsative, you might ask questions like, how is this project similar or different from previous projects? What new code or tools were you able to add to this project that you haven't used before? How can you use what you learned today in future projects? What questions do you have about coding that you could explore next time, etc.? All right, so let's get back into the actual paper itself. But the next subsection in here is titled Assessment of Learning. So it dives a little bit deeper into this first one, which is summative. So the author talks about how this is traditional approach to assessment, typically collated by the teacher. You might actually compare students with each other if you're grading based off of a curve or with some kind of an intended outcome, like a rubric. And this is much more passive for students. So it's an evaluation done on the students and their work, and you kind of have to accept the judgment imposed by somebody else, especially if there's some kind of subjectivity involved to it. And it's not just like a right or wrong, did you fix the bug kind of scenario. All right, so on page 32, the author talks about some advantages and challenges of this particular assessment type. Quote, assessment of learning provides a profile of students' achievement in terms of long-term outcomes. Many students excel in testing situations such as this because they happen to be good test takers. Some students may be motivated to work toward an endpoint in the learning process when provided opportunities to present the products of their best work. This motivation may not lead to lasting engagement in computer science for computer science's sake, as it is built in part on extrinsic rewards, wherein students who do well on assessments receive high scores. Assessment of learning does not always provide an accurate representation of students' achievements because individuals who become anxious in testing situations may be unable to produce their best work, end quote. And obviously I changed music to computer science. Yeah, I'd also add to the end of that, that students also might just get a happy accident, especially if they have like Scantron. You got a 1 in 4 chance of getting a correct answer. So just because a student happens to get a correct answer doesn't necessarily mean that they understand what's going on. I had so many students that would like create something really interesting in their like Scratch project or whatever. And I'd be like, oh, how did you know how to do that? And they're like, honestly, I just kind of like dragged blocks in a random order and I thought it looked cool. It was like, oh, okay. In moments like that, I try and unpack the algorithm for them by like using some guiding questions like, what do you think this block does? Okay, and then there's a block right after that. How do those two work together, etc.? Trying to help them understand, okay, this is what's going on. So that way it's not just a happy accident, but a happy accident that they learn from and can hopefully replicate or transfer into other settings. All right, the next one, next subsection that is assessment for learning. This is the formative assessment. And the author really emphasized that this is not a competitive process. You are not comparing peers in relation to each other, but it's a discussion in relation to what are the expected outcomes, like creating a project. And it's usually done in process. Rubrics can be really helpful for this, but you gotta be really careful about how you construct those rubrics. Like far too often I'll see like for a Scratch project or something, they'll be like, make sure you have a project that has at least like 3 sprites and at least 2 if-else conditionals and 1 variable. And then make sure that those sprites change between like 5 different costumes. Like a lot of that stuff can be arbitrary unless you're doing like a costume party that requires you to keep score with a variable. And it's up to the user to determine whether or not like you can, I don't know, thumbs up or thumbs down a sprite's random costume or something like that. Okay, well then that might include a variable, if else conditionals, costumes, multiple sprites, etc. But if students wanted to create the game Snake, that kind of criteria probably isn't super useful, like the costume change. Or maybe they just want to create a story without user interaction. Well, then the if-else conditionals and the variables might not be useful. Whenever you're creating any kind of criterion on some kind of a rubric, I can't say that word apparently this morning, rubric. There we go. Good job, Jared. I highly encourage you to think, is this making it easy for me to assess, or is this in some way enhancing their learning? If it's making it easier to assess, odds are it's constraining the ways that students can create, which may or may not be good depending on what you're trying to do or what they're trying to do. Because again, sometimes creativity within constraints is great, or it might just be holding them back. Now, one way you can actually do this to kind of like double check yourself is to check with a colleague, or you could do what the author recommends on page 33, where you actually jointly construct the rubric with students. Now, when constructing this rubric, the author recommends like creating something like here's a beginning, developing, competent, and outstanding rating for each one of these. And what's interesting is for each one of these ratings, except for the outstanding one, it has a practice and then blank right afterwards. And again, this is related to music, so it's saying like the tone quality is focused and clear through some of the range. Practice blank. So it provides a recommendation on how to improve that. So if you're going to do this with some kind of a coding project or criterion, if it's not the maximum score, then there should always be some kind of feedback to help students figure out, oh, here's one way that I can improve this. Like if you're working on modularity, you could have a beginning, developing, competent, and outstanding category for modularity. And then for each one of those, you could talk about how you could continue to improve modularity. And I'd argue you could even do it with outstanding. There's always more to learn. And it could just be, think through how you might use this in another project. Like, this is great right here, but what might you change in a different project? Now, the author points out that this rubric makes it so that students are able to compare their own project in relation to the rubric criteria, which can help them to figure out areas that they can improve. So that's great. So what are the advantages and challenges? As listed by the author on page 33, quote, through assessment for learning, students are provided with opportunities to extend their knowledge and understanding of music and their proficiencies in music performance. As such, assessment contributes to student success. This may lead to enhanced self-esteem and increased positive attitudes toward learning. Teachers are challenged to use assessment information to enhance learning without allowing this attention to assessment to interrupt their students' active involvement in the process of making. End quote. Yeah, that's a really good point. I would constantly circle around the room, asking questions or looking at code, and thinking through, okay, is the student stuck? Does the student need some space? I might do a little bit of a check-in, ask a question or two, But every single time I did one of those check-ins, it interrupted their flow a little bit. So I tried to make it as minimum as possible, so that way students had time to really think through and process things. If they were stuck on something, I'd usually walk up to them, ask some questions to help guide them through it. And when I felt like they're at a point where they're just on the cusp of figuring it out and solving their problem, I'd usually say, all right, I'm gonna check in a little bit later. And so I'd like continue to cycle around the room and then help another student one-on-one. And then as I'm cycling around the room, I'd keep checking in visually to see, has the student made progress? Do they look like they're frustrated, etc.? And then I'd walk over to them after, I don't know, 5 or 10 minutes, sometimes a little bit longer, depending on whether or not I feel like they've made progress based on what I'm seeing on their screens. And I just kind of check in with them. How's it going? So it was just constantly walking around the room and having to not only navigate looking at a few different programming languages on like 30 some odd different screens, but also be able to keep track of where students are at in relation to their goals for the week, and then how that relates to what they're currently working on right now. Are they stuck? Are they making progress, etc.? So it was a lot of question asking one-on-one, and then a whole lot of keeping track of where students were. And if I wasn't sure what their goals were, I had to like them fill it out on a Google form, and I could just look at the spreadsheet and go, oh, this person's working on this. That may or may not relate to what I actually see on the screen. And if it does not, then I just go up to them and go, how does this relate to your goals for the week? And sometimes they'd be like, oh, it relates to because of blah, blah, blah. And then other times they'd be like, oh yeah, I forgot my goal. I learned the hard way that asking that as a question is the way to go. Because if you make an assumption and go, hey, you're not working on your goal, they might get upset and go, well, I am actually, even though it looks like I'm not, this relates to this because of ABC. And I realized I had my foot in my mouth. So learn from my mistake, or don't. It's up to you. Like, I think I shared this on the podcast before. One of the ones that when I was teaching in university, this was an undergrad class at the time. It was actually like an undergrad master's combo, but most of the students were undergrads. And they were working on like this music technology project where they were, in this case, going to perform a storybook live and enhance it with audio. So they'd be able to trigger different sound effects and whatnot and manipulate their voice to make it sound like a robot or a witch or whatever, using some like live processing. So while they were working on this like storyboard project, I noticed that one of the students was on Facebook. And I'm like kind of standing in the middle of the room and just kind of like looking at the screen and just going, okay, maybe he's just checking it for a second. Maybe he's got like a sick family member or something. And like a couple minutes later, he's still on Facebook. And I'm just like, oh, okay, like I'm trying to be patient here. Finally, I just like walk up to him and I'm like, hey, what you working on? And then he's like, oh, I'm looking at this group on Facebook that talks about music technology. And they have this like files section where you can find like resources created by the like educators in this group. And I realized, yes, we had taught them how to do that like a month prior. They were on Facebook and doing exactly what we recommended in terms of distributed cognition, collective intelligence, etc., all that fun stuff. So moral of that story is ask before assuming, because maybe they are actually working on something and you just hadn't thought of it, how it relates to their project. But that's just from my experience. Anyways, assessment as learning. So this is ipsative. This is self-reflective. So the main point of this is to help students learn. It also helps them to see progress that they have made because they're comparing what their current understanding is with their prior understanding. And then again, always thinking through where you want to go next. That's not something that's discussed by authors who do ipsative assessment, but that is something that I highly recommend, is thinking through, okay, well, what's the next step? Where do you want to go next? Whether it's big picture or just like literally what is the next action you're going to take? Now, the way many musicians do this is they'll like video or audio tape performances and whatnot in order to kind of reflect on how did it go after the fact, so they're not having to do an assessment while performing live. But with coding, it's a little bit easier to just like look at the end result, the end project. But again, some prompts might be helpful to figure out, okay, what did you learn specifically? All right, so what are the advantages and challenges? This is from page 34. Quote, students need guidance as they learn to assess their work accurately and to use this assessment information to influence future progress. Assessment as learning may occur on a continuum with students gaining facility with the process through experience. It may be expected that younger students in elementary grades will need assistance from their computer science teachers in gaining a foundation of computer science understanding and proficiency from music from which to base their own judgments in terms of what they know and what they need to find out. As students enter high school, they may be better able to self-assess. Of course, this generalization may not hold for all students. Teachers must be vigilant in providing all students with sufficient feedback to help them on the road toward independent grading as they learn to teach themselves. Throughout this process, students are empowered to take ownership of their education as they develop skills as independent computer scientists. Ideally, students will sustain their emphasis on self-regulated learning beyond school, leading to lifelong engagement with computer science, end quote. Again, changing music and stuff to computer science. That last sentence right there, that for me is the main crux of this. Do you just want students to learn a concept, or do you want them to be able to teach themselves how to continue learning? Computer science in particular, and just like anything in STEM, is constantly evolving, constantly changing. There's new languages, new platforms, new technologies, etc. And if we can start teaching kids in K-12, in higher education, so adults most likely, how to think for themselves by reflecting on how they are doing in relation to what they've learned in the past, and where they want to go next. This, to me, is the most valuable thing we can possibly teach kids. Not whether or not you understand Boolean, not whether or not you understand binary, not whether you understand other B-related concepts, but that's my own opinion, my own bias, etc. You might disagree, and that's fine. You're wrong. I'm just kidding. All right, so there's a section called gathering information, and in this, they recommend, here's some different ways that you might actually do these types of assessment. You could do performance assessments, which are like rating scales, rubrics, checklists, etc. You could do portfolios, which is what I'd recommend for like project-based learning and whatnot. You could do narrative reports. You could do like goal settings and reflections through some kind of journaling over the course of a project or a unit, etc. Now, the author dives into each one of these and it talks about it in relation to music, but clearly there are a lot of connections that can be made with computer science. So I'd recommend checking out page 34 if you're interested in that. So here's a quote from the closing section. This is on page 35. It is the final paragraph, again, modifying music to computer science. Quote, assessment of learning is ingrained in traditions of education. Student assessment has long been equated with the summative function of assessment. New roles for assessment require change. Educational change of this magnitude requires time. It also depends on understandings and support from teachers, administrators, parents, and most important, students. Computer science educators are already implementing many of these strategies associated with assessment for and assessment as learning. As teachers and students expand their experiences with assessment as a learning tool, students will increasingly be empowered to take ownership of their own learning. Thus, assessment has the potential to facilitate our students' journey toward lifelong computer science engagement. End quote. Even though this is a short article, I really enjoyed it. But at the end of these Unpacking Scholarship episodes, I'd like to ask some lingering questions or share some thoughts. So one question that I have is, what types of assessment do you tend to prefer for yourself? And then what types do you tend to use with students? Are they the same or are they different? How does the size of your class or number of students impact the kinds of assessments you use? And what is gained and what is lost with such an approach? So if you are like a university professor and you're working with, I don't know, a class with like 300 students, you got like a dozen TAs or whatever, what kind of assessment are you going to use? Are you going to be able to individually go up to each of them and do an ipsative assessment? Maybe, maybe not. How about if you did it as a Google Doc or like a Google Form or something and students can submit there? Although you might not actually read every single one of them, students are still engaging in that reflective process, which is the important part. One way that you could also do it is, okay, share your ipsative reflection with a neighbor. Get some feedback from them. So try and think of ways that it does not rely on yourself providing the assessment. Like I would have it so that at the end of my classes, one half of the room would go to the other half and they'd ask some questions about the projects that were in process. And then the next day it'd flip to the other side. This made it so that peers were reflecting with each other and learning how to ask questions of their peers, learn from each other, etc. That was the goal at least. Sometimes it was not successful, but we kept iterating on it, kept trying to improve it, etc. Another question that I have is, what's missing from your assessments? So are you assessing whether they actually enjoyed learning or simply what they learned? And then a final question that I have is, what are the goals for your assessments and do they align with your rationale for becoming a CS educator? So for me, I went into education because I was suicidal during my high school and undergrad tenure. And the one thing that kept me going was making music. So I wanted to help others in the same way. I wanted to show them the wonderful things that you could do by exploring music making, etc. That's why I went into education. That eventually shifted over into computer science education, where I wanted to help kids be able to express themselves and be able to create with code. If I had assessments that were really only focusing on, do students understand what an if-else conditional is that really going to get at why I went into becoming a CS educator? I doubt it. Instead, I'd focus on, did this student that I was working with, did they have fun creating that project? Did it tap into their interests? Were they able to explore it in a way that they didn't know they could do? That, to me, was when a project was a good project for that particular student. All right, that was my hopefully relatively short introduction into the three different assessment types: summative, formative, ipsative, assessment of, assessment for, and assessment as learning. If you enjoyed this episode, please consider sharing with somebody else. Help spread the word about the resources on my website. There's like 160 some odd episodes now of this podcast. Or if you want to help out the almighty algorithm. Leave a review on whatever platform you are listening to this on, as it'll help more people find it. Thanks so much for listening to this episode. Hope you enjoyed this podcast. Stay tuned next week for another episode. Till then, I hope you're all staying safe and are having a wonderful week.